Welcome to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
My name is Jill.
And my name is Michael.
Catch us every other Wednesday talking about books, publishing, indie bookstores, chatting with authors, and so much more.
Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Book It Pod for more Book It content.
Want to read something you heard about on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/BookItPod.
Okay, listeners, something very sinister is happening at Jill's house right now.
It is?
Jill is now the parent of teenagers.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about it. How's it going?
Oh, my goodness gracious.
School's about to start.
It is like someone flipped a light switch and my 13-year-olds lost their minds.
Oh.
There's a lot of feels a lot of the time. There's a lot of feedback about everything.
Sure.
Yeah. But also, and then the switch will flip. I get a hug or they'll cuddle up on the couch to watch a movie with me. And I have whiplash. Like,
sure.
What in the world is happening?
Yeah.
Before we start today, I have to tell you a story because it involves you.
Oh.
Funny story.
Okay.
So, listeners, as you know, we talked about vacation reads already. We had a whole episode. I had not yet gone on vacation, but I had a little bit of a plan. I ordered two books that I knew I wanted to read. And then I was in the bookstore just looking for some other things to pick up. I texted Michael. I was like, should I buy this? He was like, no, you'll hate it. And I was like, how about this one? And he was like, I don't know what that is. And then he gave me two suggestions and I bought those two. So I had an audiobook, two books Michael had suggested, and two books that I had ordered for myself, had them ready to go. The week before we were supposed to go on vacation, my life blew up because I agreed to be the PTO president, and I did not pack anything. The day before we left, I was, I don't know, possessed by garden fairies and decided to take on a landscaping project.
I did see some of that on Instagram.
Yeah, like we were leaving in like 12 hours. Yeah, I can't. There is no explanation.
No better time.
Other than I was possessed by garden fairies.
Yes.
So I did literally packing for six people starting at like 9 p.m. and we were leaving at 8 a.m. the next morning.
Honestly, I'm waiting for this to surprise me. I get texts from you at midnight having done like full projects.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh, yeah. I am a night owl, so that part's not super unusual. I got to vacation super excited. I'd listened to my audiobook. We get ready to put things together to go out on the boat in the morning, and I realize I have left the entire stack of books on my desk.
Jill!
The entire stack.
I'm actually like, I could cry for you, and I was actually worried because I didn't see any updates from you about what you were reading.
Also, I was in rural Alabama where there was literally no Verizon cell service. Like, I was like literally cruising down a lake trying to send Michael things to post on social media. There was not a bookstore where I was. So I listened to a couple audiobooks, but I did not get to like read on my vacation. And
that is
so
terrible.
Sad. And to make it even worse, one of the books I wanted, I so wanted to read that I downloaded the audiobook to listen on the trip, which I did. So now I have bought it in two versions.
Well, yeah, there you go. It's America for you.
Right.
What book was it?
Beach Read.
Oh, okay. I mean, okay, well, again, speaking into existence, Emily Henry, please be on our podcast.
Hi, Emily Henry. Come be on our podcast.
You are friends with my friends, and that's the truth. We'll talk about it on the podcast. I'll tell you later, Jill.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. So anyway, in addition to having two brand spanking new 13-year-olds, I was on vacation with no books.
Oh my gosh, terrible.
Right? It's like a five-star emergency.
It's like making sense to me now. On our stories, we had posted what Jill's kids were reading on vacation, and I thought, this is so cute. I love this. Such a good idea. And now it's also like the added level of like, Jill, I didn't have any books to share.
You know, I had no books for the Thursday video. My children did because, of course, I made sure that they were covered.
Of course. That's being a parent.
So wild.
Did you read any of their books?
I actually did. So it wasn't terrible. And one of the books we're going to talk about today.
Well, I mean, what a great segue, because we're talking all about middle grade books, and I love when we do these episodes because it's just a great reminder to me to sit down and spend some time on middle grade, because you never age out of middle grade. I think we've accepted as a society that you can always read young adult, but for some reason we've left middle grade out of that equation.
Yeah.
And I hope that's changing. You know, Bookit listener, that we are, like I said, huge advocates of reading middle grade at any age. But Jill, you have been fighting for middle grade like your entire career.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this is going to date me, but like when I was in grad school, middle grade fiction was kind of divided. We had YA and we had picture books and beginning readers or easy readers. But middle grade was divided actually into two camps, like 8 to 12 and 10 to 14. Hmm. And now I can say, like, as a parent, I sort of miss those days, because now it's kind of 8 to 12. And there's such a huge difference between an 8-year-old and a 12-year-old. I kind of miss the old system. But yeah, I started my career out as a children's librarian, and then I took some time off to grow our family, and I worked at the bookstore, and it was a children's bookstore, and it had a lot of flexibility. And in each iteration, you know, I was reading middle grade, and it wasn't something that I sought out. It just kind of found me, but I fell in love with it. And I think I've told you on this podcast before, I used to get really embarrassed because people would say, oh, you're a librarian. You know, what book should I read? And I was like, I only read kid books.
Right.
I really didn't start reading adult fiction very much until you and I became friends. And so I just have a special place in my heart for middle grade fiction. And I hate that it's treated like little kid material. So I don't think it is.
Same. And I think that, like, I think that's one of the good things about social media is that I understand being kind of embarrassed when someone asks for a book rec and you only have, like, quote unquote only have, like, middle grade or children's books to recommend.
Yeah.
But then, like, so much of the people I follow on Bookstagram and Book Talk and that sort of thing, like, are such diverse readers in those terms, like, are reading a lot of adult fiction, but also reading a ton of YA and reading a ton of middle grade. And I follow a lot of librarians on social media, and they're also advocating for a lot of middle grade. And I think it's because really good middle grade is just as good as award-winning adult fiction.
Yeah.
And I mean, you really shifted my reading habits over the years, ever since I was friends with you and then you were friends with me.
Which we know happened at different times.
A full year between. But I have such a love for middle grade in a way that sneaks up on me. But it's because, especially with the books we're talking about today, I had such an emotional response to them in a way that I don't always with adult fiction. And frankly, that I don't always with YA. And I like YA a lot. But I think middle grade, a lot of times when I read YA, I feel like it's trying to do what it thinks its reader wants versus, like, what the author wants to write. And middle grade always just has been reading a lot more authentic to me lately than most genres.
I think middle grade has been reading more authentically because of some of the trends we're seeing.
Sure. Talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have kind of noticed, I'm going to say, like, three trends. Mental health, Me Too, or like plots exploring sexism or patriarchy in general, and graphic novel, memoir / like nonfiction. Mm. And I think this is really interesting because I read yesterday morning that 1 in 6 kids that are aged 6 to 19 live with mental health challenges. And nearly 8% struggle specifically with anxiety. You know, and that's a ton of kids. It's like 4.5 million kids. And I think authors and publishers are moving towards using like sensitivity readers and medical experts to ensure that we're getting like quality and accuracy and that we are, you know, being inclusive. And it's not perfect by any means. I'm not saying that it is, but I'm glad that we are getting to a place where this huge group of kids can see themselves in books. But I'm also really glad to see books that deal with mental health in like a complex and empathetic way. And we're seeing like mental health challenges as one aspect of a character's life and not the focus of the narrative a little bit more now.
Totally.
And books that present middle graders as like fully rounded, complex people who like maybe also have anxiety or also have ADHD or also have OCD, and they are moving through life like everyone does. It's good modeling for everybody, and it's, you know, mental health is kind of a passion of mine. So I think that's been a huge trend. Have you noticed that at all?
Yes, and I've noticed it in really nuanced ways because in the past, books were always, especially for young people, and I think everyone's heart was always in the right place. But it was a little too, like, this was the one way to be an anxious person. If you don't experience anxiety like this, then you don't experience anxiety or obtrusive thoughts or anything. And now I think it's really complex, especially in young fiction, because mental health is complex and no two people have the same experience with it. And it took me a long time growing up to realize like what I was experiencing was anxiety and OCD. Uh-huh. I was like 17 or 18 when I finally was like, I don't know what's happening to my brain, but like, I can't stop. Like these things keep happening to me. And my mom was like, I think you have anxiety. And then I went to a therapist. He was like, you do, but you also have OCD. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that this was what that looked like. Like, and I'm noticing that a lot more in middle grade, beyond just more kids seeing themselves in fiction, but like the way they think and feel as well.
Yeah. And I think it manifests itself in a lot of ways. Like when we talked to Jasmine Warga about The Shape of Thunder, you know, clearly that family was dealing with PTSD. And it wasn't like, this is the PTSD family and this book is about PTSD. You know, it was just something that they were going through as this story happened. And that's what life is like. One of the books I read today, the main character goes to see a therapist, which also happened in Jasmine Warga's books. I don't remember before this year reading a book in which part of just the plot and it not being the focus of the book was, oh yeah, and I went to therapy today.
Oh, I know. And like even that in reality is becoming more and more like normalized, but still I think there's still like an anxiety about sharing that as just a part of life. And I think that I think art can imitate life and life can imitate art. And I hope this is a place where they are intersecting.
Absolutely. I think on the kind of Me Too front, I don't think this one is big, but I do think we're starting to see it in middle grade. Yeah. And it's maybe not as firmly gaining steam as mental health. And I think it faces kind of the social pressure of wanting to protect kids from things like abuse.
Sure.
But I mean, here's the thing. It's often kids in this middle grade age bracket that are abused. Like they're living this or they have friends who are living this. And, you know, we can't protect our kids from things that they are experiencing or already know about. Like it's so much better to talk about it together. And I definitely see it at the upper end of the thing, but we talked about some of the I can't remember the name of that book where the girls dress coded We talked about that last season. That's another one.
And that's a younger...
It is. Younger. I would put that firmly in like Pippa and Truman's age group, like maybe 10 to 13-year-olds would be into that. Mm-hmm. It's set in middle school. And I do think we're seeing it more around things like dress codes and equality in sports and people being able to play the sports that they want and less on harassment and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm interested to see where it goes.
Yeah, and that's true. It's a good point that you say, like, we can't protect them from what they're already experiencing because all we're doing is teaching them to, like, when we think it's protection, it's actually kind of just, like, silencing them accidentally.
Yeah.
And I totally have empathy for the fact that it is very complicated for young people, especially, and it's complicated to talk about with them in delicate ways, especially in fiction. Mm-hmm. On the other side of that, we've read really, we've read a lot of middle grade that does not shy away from reality. And one of those, like you mentioned, Jasmine Walker's book, The Shape of Thunder, which is one of the best books I've read this year. And it's middle grade.
Absolutely.
And it's really, really adult thematically. And that's because like young people exist in the same world that I do. And they experience things that I read on the news. So we can't stop what's happening to them all of the time, but we can help them understand it better and have the language to share when something bad has happened to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was talking to another parent yesterday about one of the things kind of transitioning into middle school, the kids make friends more independently than when you're like organizing their play dates. And our middle school combines all the elementary schools together. And so you're meeting new kids. Like, I don't know these kids or their parents. And I was talking with another mom whose daughter is the grade above my two. And she said, you know, it really starts to get into that place where when you tell your eight-year-old that Bobby can come over here to play, but they can't go to Bobby's house, they just kind of accept it. And your 13-year-old goes, why not?
Right.
And then you get to explain to them like, well, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, but, you know, Bobby's mom is often drinking adult beverages during the day, you know. It's you just navigate it in this completely different way. And we've been in this place now where I'm like explaining alcoholism because their friends' parents are dealing with that.
Wow.
Their friends see that. I'm like, you can't ride in the car with that parent. And this is why.
Wow. This is just like a great example of like, okay, they can handle more than we think they can in fiction.
Yeah.
Because we're helping them handle it in real life.
Right. Yeah. Wow. No, I mean, it's wild. We have had, this summer has been a lot of firsts. And that was among them. And I think, you know, when we expose kids to these things in really quality books for them, it's not a complete shock. It's not, it's a thing that they know about. And they're like, oh yeah, mom, that's like what goes on at Bobby's house. So it's a pet peeve for me, but you know, we are the type of family, I'm going to be honest with my kids, you know, and then we talked about how to deal with it. You know, you don't make the other kid feel bad. You don't say like, I can't ride the car with your mom because she's an alcoholic.
Right, exactly.
You know, you say like, oh, my mom's really picky about who I ride with and, you know, I don't have permission or, you know. And so we really got to role play that and stuff. And I think seeing those situations in a book helps with real life.
Okay, so thinking about that, when you we've talked about this a little bit on the podcast, but what draws you into a really good middle grade book? Like when you're reading, like what do you like? This one is amazing compared to other ones that aren't. Like what do good ones do well?
So I think this is a really interesting question. And I get asked it a lot because as you know, like I have this side gig where I teach classes for teachers and librarians about books and librarianship and literature and stuff. And I get asked this across the board, teachers, librarians, parents, like what makes a good middle grade book? And my answer is exactly what makes a good book for a grown-up.
Mm.
With characters and situations that relate with kids.
Mm-hmm.
And you're simply making adjustments for age, but you're not dumbing them down. They're going to tackle situations, relationships, and the complexities of being like 8 to 12. And they're not prescriptive. You know, they employ appropriate voice and vocabulary and realistic situations for being 8 to 12. But otherwise, good books are good books.
Period.
Period. Yeah.
Ah, that will definitely be the soundbite we put on social media.
I'll get off my soapbox, but it's, I just feel so strongly about it. It's not, books for kids are not just like teaching them lessons or, absolutely. I don't know, you just hear a lot of things, you know, we don't have to be didactic. It doesn't have to be like, what are you learning from this book? They can read for pleasure. They can like genres. They can read historical stuff that ties into their content. They can read fiction. Like, they're readers just like everyone else. How about you? I'm stepping off my soapbox. What do you look for?
That just made me reflect a little bit and how in what I would say is middle grade that I like is what you're saying. It's just, it's not because it's a good middle grade book. It's because it's a good book.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, what I find to be good in middle grade is what I find to be good in adult fiction is really thoughtful writing, interesting characters that feel authentic.
Buzzword, authentic.
Yeah, super authentic. Of course, I want it to be diverse, and because I'm at an age where I do a lot of reflecting on the reading I did growing up and how different my life could have been had I seen like gay people represented more, like queer families, that sort of thing. But for me, ultimately, it comes down to, did this story impact me in an emotional way? And if it did, then it's a good book.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah.
I know we have a bunch of recommendations to get to, but I just quickly want to mention one other thing, which you and I have talked about a little bit, but not a ton on the podcast, is graphic novels. And we've got this huge trend of nonfiction or like memoir graphic novels.
Yeah.
I think everybody knows like Raina Telgemeier, but you know, like Victoria Jameson has like won the Newbery now.
Mm-hmm.
I love When Stars Are Scattered was one of my favorite books of last year.
And what's that one called? Jerry, he won the Newbery as well.
Oh, Jerry Crab. New Kid. Yes, New Kid. And the sequel is really good too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we're seeing more of that. And I never read graphic novels before. I didn't have any interest in them. And then Pippa went through this phase where that's all she was reading. And so I was like, I got to figure this out. Like, we got to find what she likes. We got to identify titles. Like, and now I'm like, these are really cool. But I definitely needed like a prod in the pants to devote the time to trying them. Do you read graphic novels at all?
I have read graphic novels. Well, first of all, I want to say I feel like we would be remiss if we didn't shout out to one of our Booksroom friends, Read Along with Nat, who is a huge graphic novel advocate, reads so many graphic novels, as well as our friend and former colleague, Erin Barker.
Yes.
Her new last name, I'm sorry, I can't remember.
Erin is newly married, and I also can't remember her new last name. Hi, Erin.
With a W. Willits? But maybe he doesn't want that out there. Anyway. she too has always been a huge graphic novel advocate at the store. So with that being said, I have read a few, and a few being like generous word here, because I think they've always intimidated me in that I'm not a visual learner as much as I always think I am when I go to read a graphic novel.
Yeah.
And what I would find myself doing is like just reading the words and not forgetting to look at the images. And so I need to have better practice at it, where, because it's part of the experience. And the times where I've really paid attention, slowed down, I've loved them. I mean, and the only ones I have reference to are adult ones like Fun Home, Mouse, The Explorer's Guild is a terrible book, but there's a graphic novel in it. It's just look it up. It's the first book club book we ever did, and it's garbage.
I love it.
But it is on my to-do list of the second half of this year and into 2022, read more graphic novels.
It is definitely something, like, the first one was a slog, not because the book wasn't good.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't used to reading that format.
Right, same.
And after I got used to it, and it really kind of took almost a whole book, I was like, oh, this is fun. Like, I get it now. I get it now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up, actually. Because, like, it is really something that is saturated in a good way in middle grade. And it's obviously, like, resonating with kids. And, we would have been remiss if we didn't bring it up.
Yeah, I think those are kind of the three big things I'm kind of seeing on the horizon this year.
Yeah.
And middle grade fiction sales are up, thanks COVID.
Thanks COVID.
I mean, people were buying books. People were buying more books across the board, but middle grade fiction was one of the largest growth categories.
Oh my gosh.
I know. It makes me so happy.
Well, why don't we get into it? Let's do our book
recs. Let's talk recommendations. Do you want to go first?
So first I want to say all of my titles are backlist titles because I used this opportunity to catch up on middle grade books that I just had failed to read when they came out. And backlist books are still books that deserve to be read.
We can read books whenever we want.
Yes, absolutely. So my first one is Front Desk by Kelly Yang.
I love this. I love this one. I love the series. I love Kelly.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Okay, so I know Joe knows the story, and I'm sure, listener, you do as well, but here's just a brief synopsis. It's about Mia Tang and her parents, who are immigrants from China and newly residents of America, and they have very little here that makes them feel at home. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the book, Mia is thinking back to her friends and family in China, and her parents take on a position as managers of a motel, and its owner has made it seem like the perfect situation. Like, oh, the pay is really good, room and board, free room and board. They have a pool. Like, child Mia is like, this is amazing. Like, I can swim whenever I want.
We're going to Disneyland.
And she has these ideas of being like a front desk manager, and like that part I thought was really sweet because I, like, growing up, like, certain jobs seemed really fun and professional, and like you just played, like, why do you have a lemonade stand? It's because it seems fun. And very slowly, of course, they realize that the motel owner is finding new and creative ways to make their paychecks smaller and smaller. They aren't allowed to use the pool because of the amount of towels that would take to wash. Speaking of towels, the washer and dryer break because they're incredibly old. Yeah. And the owner makes them pay for new ones, somehow blaming it on them. But the whole time, Mia is determined to find the good and to be hopeful. And she really wants to be a writer. Mia really wants to be a writer. And her mom belittles that dream every chance she gets. And she tells her to focus on her math and science skills.
Yeah.
And slowly throughout the book, she gets better and better at writing and kind of teaches herself tools to become a better writer. And I just think that this book was so good, like, beyond what everyone was telling me about it, because I know that you love it. I would get so emotional talking about it. Like, there was a moment when I had read an excerpt and I came downstairs and I tried to tell my husband about it, and I just started crying so hard because I was like, this is clearly a real experience. Like, this is a really authentic story about how we treat immigrants in America, and this is for children. And I found myself really eager to read it and really, like, mourning the loss of reading it before it was even over. I think this is, like, one of the best books I've read in the last couple of years.
Have you seen the book's website? It's frontdeskthebook.com. And Kelly Yang has set up this really cool page where there's, like, character biographies. And there's a whole section for teachers if they want to use the book in class. And, of course, all about Kelly and all that kind of stuff. But it also has the real story behind the book as one of the tabs on there. And it's some pictures of her family. And it's not like a memoir. It's just kind of based on a true story kind of thing. But yeah, that's why it feels like that.
Yeah, I think it's, I think Front Desk is just like the perfect combination of universally experienced middle grade anxieties. Like, do my peers like me? Mm-hmm. Is this person bullying me? Do I share aspects of my life with my friend, even though they embarrass me or make me feel shame for whatever reason? Like, everyone feels this way, combined with the specific immigrant experience that I will never be able to understand from that perspective, from their perspective.
Yeah.
And it's just a book that deserves everything good that's been said about it and more. I've thought about it so many times since I finished it. And this was like a month ago.
I love hearing that because, you know, a lot of times when you really love a book, you know, and you're encouraging other people to read it.
Yeah.
Or they've heard from a lot of people that it's good, but you're like, can it live up to these wild expectations? Like, they're so lofty. And I love hearing that it did. Like, that just delights me.
Yeah. And like, same. Like, I was worried about it because I was like, all right, I'm starting heavy, like, or not heavy, but like a heavy hitter. And I'm glad that it was one of those things where it's like, kind of like, yes, the expectations were high, but it was also not remotely what I expected. And I think in that way, it really was able to be what people were promising and more.
Yeah, I agree.
What about you?
I'm going to start by just like ripping off the Band-Aid. Okay. And talking about a book that I do not recommend.
Ooh, I just wanna, spicy time.
I know, spicy time. I just want to like get over it. And I'm like excited to hear what you have to say. So one of the books I picked for this episode was The Mysterious Disappearance of Aiden S. as Told to His Brother. It's by David Levithan. Uh-huh. And, you know, we're very purposeful about reading diversely. Mm-hmm. And I picked this one because I had read that the main character has a trans family member. And also, it was a book that featured boys, and I read tons of books. You know, my go-to is always to pick up stories about girls and women. Those are kind of my niche. And so, you know, I was like, great. And, you know, David Levithan, everybody knows him. I was like, great, let's read this. And it was on the Indie Next list. So I was fantastic. It is about, there's two brothers, Lucas and Aiden. Aiden is 12, and we know that Lucas is like his close in age younger brother. Aiden disappears for 6 days. His family and friends are like frantic with worry. There's like huge searches for him. It's all over the news. And when he comes back, he's telling this, you know, wild story that he traveled through a dresser in his attic into this other world. And the other world is called Avenue, and it's sort of Narnia-esque.
I love this. Sounds like Narnia so far.
Yeah. And, you know, David Levithan is like so well loved. And I had read the book that he co-authored with John Green, which is called Will Grayson, Will Grayson. And I loved it. But I did not love this book. If it were not for the podcast, I don't know if I would have finished it.
You'd have. Okay. You would have DNF'd it.
I would have DNF'd it. And I'm pretty sure it took me almost 3 weeks to get through it, which is hugely unusual for me. Yes. And I think I spent the second 2 weeks complaining to you about it.
But like veiled, because you didn't want to reveal anything. You're just like letting me know that you weren't enjoying it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Overall, I found the pacing to be just incredibly slow. Also, the characters do not speak or act like kids.
Oh, huge red flag for us.
I mean, the older brother, who's not even the person telling us the story, is 12. I have two kids that just turned 13. The younger brother, who's, you know, at most 11, has the emotional intelligence and like therapy-esque vocabulary of it's a 35-year-old. Mm. There are like world-building inconsistencies might not be the right word, but like, you know, he went to this magical place. There are things about it that don't make sense.
Okay.
But they're all so easily explained. Food tastes different there. Why? Because time moves differently there. How does it move differently? We don't know.
It just does. Got it.
Why? We don't know. How do you know? We don't know. These things just jump. Every time they talked about the Narnia-like place, I just found myself getting incredibly frustrated because there was never any world building. We were just accepting that this place that doesn't make a lot of sense exists. And here's the kicker. We know from the very first chapter that it does exist. They reveal that to us. So when Aiden comes back from Avenue through the dresser, his brother finds him, Lucas finds him in the attic, and he has a blue leaf in his hair. Mm-hmm. And of course, we don't have blue leaves. So the reader knows right out of the gate that this place exists. Aiden starts telling this story and people are like, and they don't believe him. But the problem is there's no tension.
Oh,
because we already, we already know it's true. But the whole point of the book is it true? Is it not true? People are reacting and not believing it. Do you believe it? Their, you know, brother relationship and whether or not the brother believes it. But when you told me in the first chapter that it was true, I don't care.
Wow.
There was nothing, there just wasn't enough to get me invested in it.
Yeah.
And then, literally, on the second to the last page, Aiden comes out as gay. There's zero character development or journey there. He's gay at the end.
That's how I came out. I went to another world, a blue feather fell in my hair, and I was like, maybe this makes me queer.
That was like a loud laugh. Yeah. But it was like, I read it, I was like, what? What? Yeah. And I mean, I wanted to like this book. Their aunt is trans and it's handled really nicely. It's like, my aunt used to be my uncle and she lives in the city and she's really cool and fun. And nothing about her personality had anything to do with her transitioning. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, this is great. I love this representation. It was the only thing I liked about the book.
Oh, I mean, at least that's what you liked about it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it could have made me more mad, but
yeah.
I don't know. It was not for me. And I just read that one David Levithan book. Sure. So I'd liked it. So I was expecting to like this.
It's interesting that you're saying this because David Levithan seems like such a lovely person. People genuinely like I think he's probably very lovely. So this sounds a lot like what my issues are with his books as well, which is he has such good ideas. I love reading his synopses. The execution is like almost always off. Like,
yeah,
someone else should do his really good ideas, which is probably why he makes an incredible editor.
Yes, that is a really interesting take because I think the story was there, like exploring somebody comes back from having been missing with a wild story about having been in a fantasy land is a great plot. And it's amazing. I don't think you would have to explain the place.
Sure.
If you were focusing on, did this or did this not happen?
Right.
And you never told me.
Yeah. And I like what you're saying about tension because I think if I don't feel tension, I'm just not going to care. And
yeah.
I'm not talking about like high stakes, like heisty stuff. I'm just saying like
no.
Anything. If it's emotional tension or if it's plot driven tension, like whatever it is, like make me want to turn the next page. And this reminds me of it's a book for adult, but I thought it was an interesting take was a friend of mine said that she was reading Ready Player One and I asked what she thought because I'd only heard at the time really good things about it. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I don't know. And I was like, why? And she was like, well, it's virtual reality. Like, I'm not really worried about what's happening to them because I know none of it's real. And I was like, okay.
Oh, interesting.
You know? And so I've only seen the movie. I haven't read the book, but it just sounds, it just reminded me of that. And I really want to love David Levithan. Maybe I will someday, but I too have had a really hard time with his books in the past where it's like always almost there, which makes it more frustrating.
Yeah. That's how I felt about it because I was like, from the synopsis, I was like, man, this sounds interesting.
Yes.
And then I just felt like we got bogged down in other stuff.
Yeah.
But also, I felt like you just gave it away. You left the gate open in the very first chapter, and it wasn't compelling enough for me.
We've talked about doing an episode about books we liked despite ourselves. Maybe you will find a David Levithan book that you liked despite yourself, and maybe I will find a book by an author who I'm not allowed to mention anymore.
Yeah, you're not saying that name.
Who? But maybe I'll find a book of that person's that I do like despite myself.
Yes. Did you read the one I suggested to you?
Which one? And then we'll bleep it. I haven't yet.
Yeah.
I'm just nervous because I just like.
Yeah.
It's just, anyway.
I get it. Yeah. Your time is precious. No, yes. Listeners, I don't know. Do you love David Levithan? What one should I read? I want to love him like everyone else.
Yes, me too. Honestly, me too. Yes, I really, really do. I've almost read Boy Meets Boy 1,000 times, but because I haven't liked his stuff in the past, I just don't want to read it. But we're doing an episode in season 2 where that is on my list of possibly reading, so maybe I'll just do it.
You should.
Okay.
Or there we go. Let's do it.
Okay, good.
Yeah. It's decided. Thank you, listeners. What about you? Do you have another recommendation or something you read for this episode?
Yeah, I do have another one. It is When You Trap a Tiger by Tay Keller.
Oh, I haven't read this one.
Gorgeous cover. That is why I picked it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then the synopsis sounded really beautiful. And I was just like coming off of Front Desk and was feeling very raw from that. And so everything was making me feel really emotional. So When You Trap a Tiger is about a family, Lily, her older sister, Sam, and their mom, who move from California to Seattle to be close to their grandmother as her health continues to decline. Mm-hmm. And her grandmother is kind of a pillar in this community. And they've lived with her before. They moved there when their father was killed in a car accident for a couple of years. And in that time, their grandmother shared a lot of Korean folklore, fairy tales, stories. And Lily is sort of still in that age where she like really wants to believe that a lot of it's true. And her sister, Sam, is just like a pouty teenager who is kind of trying to do her own thing, find her independence, and they're like really having a hard time connecting. One of those stories involves, well, a lot of it involves that Lily's grandmother always says, never trust a tiger. When they talk to you, don't listen to them. They're very cunning. And on their way there, Lily thinks she sees a tiger in the road. And her grandmother also experiences seeing this tiger. And she keeps saying like, I'm not ready to go. So Lily decides to try and trap this tiger. And she does, and it's in her grandmother's basement. And she says, your grandmother stole stories from us.
Because she thinks that the tiger is representative of her grandmother's impending death, or there's a literal tiger.
So.
Oh, we don't know.
Hard to say.
Yeah.
No one else sees it but Lily and her grandmother. And because it has something to do with one of the stories she grew up hearing was like women turning into tiger, or women's like daughters turning into tigers and having to live like tiger human hybrid lives. And so she traps this tiger, and the tiger says, like, if you collect the stories and give them back to me, I will make sure your grandmother ends up okay. And the stories she wants her to trap are ones that her grandmother said like should never be heard. They're painful. And so, but she ultimately does, and the tiger starts telling her these stories, and they are like, they bring Lily a lot of pain. Like they make her really sad. Basically, the tiger is very cunning in saying like, we'll make sure she's okay. But her version of that is like, we'll make sure she's no longer in pain. And that of course disappoints Lily and makes her feel like such a child. And the ending is really sweet in that, again, like children's lit, like she has to come to terms with the fact that like this tiger was never going to be able to save my grandmother from her illness. Like, and I've been selfish in thinking that that's what she meant. Also, like I've misunderstood how tigers are cunning, and reconciling like what I think of my grandmother, as well as like I'm starting to grow up, like what is real and what is fantasy, and what of fantasy is real. I
love this premise. I get now why you're saying it was hard to explain.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm doing a really terrible job if anyone's ever read the book, I'm sure. And here's the thing. I really liked it. I really wanted to love it. And I didn't.
Ooh.
Which makes me feel like I liked it less than I did. And I'm glad that I've had some time to think about it since I finished it.
Mm-hmm.
To know like, no, I'm judging it based off of my experience reading Front Desk, which like just happened to be really emotional and like had just like a really visceral reaction to it. This was a really good book. I think it won the Newbery Honor. And that also, you know, adds a little bit of weight to it, maybe unfairly in my head.
Yeah.
But I think that ultimately I really did like it. I think some things were too easy. And there wasn't as much, like we said, tension as I expected from the premise.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, definitely recommend it.
I'm so glad to hear you say at first you weren't sure how you felt about it, or maybe weren't totally sold. And then, but later you had more feelings about it.
Yeah, and more clarity.
As I... We talked about the Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
Yes.
On a previous episode, I had listened to the audio and I was like, I didn't not like it, but I didn't love it. And same feelings, like I wanted to. And I think I had finished it maybe a day or two before we recorded.
Right.
And of course, now like a month or something has gone by and it has stuck in my head.
Right.
And I have found myself thinking about specific parts of the plot and kind of interesting nuances. And I feel differently about it now than I did then. And I think it was hugely impacted by the book I had read previous.
Yes. And I think that like we fall prey to that all of the time. Like,
yeah.
When you love a book so intensely, the next book after that is going to be judged unfairly. Sorry about it. Next book. And but be patient with me, because I promise if it's good, I'm probably gonna in a couple weeks be like, actually that was really good.
Actually, and that was amazing. Yeah.
Yes, and that's how I feel about this book. And I agree with you. I keep thinking about it because it was so visual. I mean, the book is written really, really well in that way. Like I see certain colors when I think about it. And I think it deals with grief and melancholy really well, and losing a loved one one way and losing a loved one in a different way, and how those two different forms of grief feel like they can never intersect. Like,
yeah,
their father died when she was quite young, and she like doesn't really remember him, and her older sister does and remembers how sad they were, and like hates driving, doesn't like to be in a car. And that was a really sudden, aggressive death. Whereas the slow demise of her grandmother is a very different grief that you experience.
Absolutely.
And the sisters handle that in different ways too. And I think that's totally natural and normal. And yeah, so ultimately, I think it's really, really good.
I want to give this one a try now. I haven't read
it. You have to. I actually think you would. I would love to hear what you think about it.
Oh, I'll read it.
Great.
My next one is both highly recommended, and I think you will love it.
Oh.
It's a debut.
Love it.
And it's written in verse.
Oh, sign me up.
It is Starfish by Lisa Phipps.
I've heard you talk about this.
Yes. So this is the audiobook that I had purposefully downloaded to listen on vacation.
Your one success.
My one success on vacation. So here's the setup. Ever since Ellie wore a whale bathing suit and did like a cannonball into the pool on her fifth birthday, she has been given whale nicknames and bullied about her weight. The kids at school, you know, they call her whale. Her siblings tease her. Worst of all, her mother is like pressuring her to lose weight and kind of like threatening her with bariatric surgery, controls her food and judges her choices and kind of like everything from like clothes to snacks to activities. And it's really like the story of Ellie's journey to self-love and acceptance. And it's just, it's amazing. Mm. I am so happy to see it like getting a lot of love in the book industry. Good. It's a story that's like, it's gutting, but it's also uplifting. And mm-hmm. I feel like it's has a chance to be really powerful.
Wow.
And this is going to sound weird, but I love that the emotional abuse portrayed in the book. I love, hang with me. I appreciated that the emotional abuse she suffers from her family is mm-hmm. included. And it's not just like she's being bullied at school, but it's also in her own home. And mm-hmm. I felt like it was really truthfully and thoughtfully presented. It's a fairly short story, but it packs a powerful punch. And I know so many people are going to connect with it. And I mentioned earlier that I had read a book about a child who sees a therapist. That is part of Ellie's journey in this book. And again, really nicely handled.
Oh, this is a great example of like this age group is about to be very aware of their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Writing books for them to feel more empowered about their bodies is the right thing to do. And to your point, that it's happening at home as well, I think is a great reminder for adults and parents to read it and to see the micro, macro, the overt and covert ways that they might be accidentally or not policing their children's bodies.
Yeah.
I have got to read this book.
I think that you will really enjoy it. And Ellie's voice is so spot on for I think she's 12 in the book. And it's how a 12-year-old thinks and speaks and acts. I did it on audio. The audio was great. The narrator did a really nice job. It just really kind of got my gears turning. I will mm-hmm. never forget the first time one of my kids mentioned diet culture. It happens so much earlier than we think it's going to. And I think things are starting to change, but it really infiltrates mm-hmm. everything. And it's, you know, we see it in, you know, some food being labeled clean and mm-hmm. cleanses. And there's just like a lot of toxic language around mm-hmm. it. And I think it's really important. You know, we talk a lot at home about food being fuel for your body to do the things that you want to do. But I mean, we're talking about overcoming such a huge history and pervasiveness of diet culture. And I really liked this book.
And think about how many times we've said things are changing. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. I can't wait to be in the future.
Yeah. Where we're still saying it.
Yes. I hope there's no COVID there.
Oh, okay. Well, at least that, yes.
How long have we been saying that? Oh, my word.
Enough.
Okay. Moving on. Michael, do you have another suggestion?
Yes, I have one more. Mm-hmm. And this one was a real callback to my childhood. I loved this author growing up, like, so much. And I hadn't read anything of hers since I was in middle school. And I had had this arc for years. Well, 2019, I think, is when it was published. And finally was like, just read it. Like, you have it. You want to read it. You love her. And it's The Strangers by Margaret Peterson Haddix, which is a part of her Greystone Secrets series.
Yeah.
And it is about three siblings, Chess, Emma, and Finn, who are living in, I believe, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
They are, you know, normal kids. Their lives are, like, I don't want to say not special, but just, like, standard.
Yeah.
And they wake up one morning, or they come to school, home from school one day, to the news that says three kids in Arizona were abducted. And they are also named Chess, Emma, and Finn. And they share the same birthday as them, same ages and everything. And they look different, but, like, in kind of really subtle ways. And their mom has a really intense reaction to this. And ignores it, though, of course. Like, you know, she just pretends everything's fine. And then the next day, they find out she has to, quote unquote, go on a work trip and has to stay with this woman and her daughter for an unknown amount of time. They are really smart kids, and Emma especially is really smart. She, like, looks into patterns and tries to figure stuff out based off of just, like, facts and science, and pays attention in that way. And mm-hmm. Chess is the oldest, and also just, like, recognizing, hey, like, mom's acting weird. I'm supposed to protect my siblings. But how do I know how to protect them if I don't know what's going on? So yeah. All of this leads to learning more than they ever knew. Alternate worlds. A mysterious, like, bunker in their basement that leads to this mysterious world. Governments in these other worlds that are trying to suppress people. And their mom was someone who was fighting this in the other world and escaped and are now in the world that they're in with, she's in with her kids. So they try to go and save their mom, who has been taken because she was trying to save these kids who were abducted by this ulterior other world because of what she did in the past.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like, classic Margaret Peterson Haddix, like, yeah. This, like, sweet little, like, Ohio woman who, like, has these, like, wild plots and really knows how to, like, make a book so fucking fun for kids.
Yeah. Pippa has read this.
Oh, she has?
Yeah, you mentioned that you were reading it to me, and I was like, I swear I've seen that book in this house.
Okay, but I would like to know what she thinks.
So I asked Pippa, and she was like, oh, I love that series.
Okay, I have the second one. I went and got the second one because I liked, and it ends on such a cliffhanger, which I think mm-hmm. is, like, a really good and fun thing to do in kids' books, because, like, if you've written a really good book with a cliffhanger, they're going to want to pick up the next one.
Yeah.
And I really loved it. Like I said, Margaret Peterson Haddix was really formative for me. I read Among the Hidden in sixth grade and lost my mind and devoured as many of her books as I could. And then she was coming to our school for a talk, and it's like an entire school assembly. And then if you wanted to meet her, like, in a smaller group, you had to write an essay about, like, why you wanted to and how, I don't really remember what it was about, but I really wanted to. So I wrote an essay and won, and I got to, like, talk to her, and it was just like, like, and I was an adult, and, like, well, that's, I mean, yes, that's very exciting. But, like, when I was a kid, it was just, like, really felt
absolutely like a
huge moment.
And, yeah, somebody who impacted your life. You got to talk to them in person. That's amazing. Yes,
and she was like, yeah, and she, like, asked me, like, what kind of books do I like to read, and just made me feel important.
Yeah.
And so I was really excited to get back to her work, and I can't wait to read the rest of them.
It's so funny that you mention Among the Hidden, because so when I asked Pippa about this book, she said, oh, yeah, I've been meaning to see if the author had any other books. And I was like, oh, honey.
You're going to be busy.
Yeah. So she immediately downloaded from the library the ebook of Among the Hidden and read it in, like, a day and a half.
Yes. Yeah. That's how I read it. I remember being like, this is the best book that I have ever read. It's the best book that's ever been written. Nothing will ever top it. And, like, Yeah. And then I read Running Out of Time, which was another like really high concept book for that age group. And Don't You Dare Read This, Mrs. Dunphy, and Chekhov's and Landings I loved. Like, she was just really, she permeates my memories in middle school because I was just always reading her books.
Yeah. Anyway,
love you, Margaret.
Love it. My last one is a new book. I'm just checking to see if it's out. Yes, it came out in May. And I got a galley of it and just really liked it. It is called The Kate in Between by Claire Swinarski. Highly recommend it. The story opens with Kate and she's feeling down and just abandoned. Her mom skipped town without her. And, you know, she's like at this transition point at school. And all of a sudden, she falls in with this clique of popular kids. And they're her friends and they accept her and they like her. But it also means ditching her childhood bestie, Hattie. And I was prepared to be annoyed at this point because I'm like, God, the setup is as old as time. Like, this one's different. So Hattie is, of course, as you expect, targeted by the popular kids. And here's where it gets interesting because you've read a million books like that.
Right.
The prank endangers her life.
Oh, I've heard about this.
And only then does Kate step in. And what Kate didn't know was that someone was taking a video, and the video starts from where she actually stepped up to help Hattie. And it goes viral, and everyone thinks that she's a hero. Because, of course, they don't know the backstory. But she knows, and Hattie knows, and it's only a matter of time, of course, until everyone knows.
Right.
And I loved it. I felt like it was a new take on a time-old setup. I loved the exploration of identity and popularity and bully culture and going viral. Because, you know, like, every kid wants to go viral.
Right.
I just really... It highlights kind of the nuances of like being human, and nobody really falls neatly into like good people and bad people. You know, like Kate is the protagonist in this book and she's messy. But it's also super relatable. So I really liked it.
I love hearing that because I think something that can often kind of like grind my gears is when like social media or texting or like really modern stuff is put into a story and it just feels try hard and just not authentic. So I like hearing when something is used in pursuit of the story. Like it couldn't have been told without that. And it's also something that kids, like you said, like every kid wants to go viral.
Yeah.
So like they're going to understand that.
And this is a video that could totally go viral. I mean, like the whole thing is very believable and relatable.
Oh, that's so good to hear.
Yeah, I loved it. I don't hate me, Claire Swinarski. I don't love the cover.
Oh.
I want a better cover for it. That's my only thing about this book. It came probably to my house in March and did not read it until this month because, you know, we're garbage people and I didn't like the cover.
So ignore the cover, everyone.
Yeah, ignore the cover, read it anyway.
I have so many books like that. I mean, I have to check myself. Like, I'm just like, oh, I look at a cover and I pass it up and then someone's like, that's the best book I've ever read. And then I read it. I'm just like,
why am I garbage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm never going to change.
Yeah. Well, also true.
There's that. I love talking middle grade.
Me too.
I was just talking to somebody who listens to the podcast. I was saying how this is why I love doing it. And I gave this as an example. I was like whenever we do middle grade conversations or middle grade authors, like I'm so happy because it reminds me to read middle grade. And the person I was talking to was like, that same thing happened to me listening to your podcast. I hadn't read middle grade in years and it reminded me to.
I love this story. You have to tell me who it was when we're not on the podcast. I can't wait.
Yeah. So listener, listen. Wow. I'm a wordsmith. Listener, Tell us your middle grade recs. We want to hear them. We want to add them to our TBR piles. Hit us up on Instagram at Book It Pod, Twitter at Book It Pod. We're on TikTok at Book It Pod. Send us an email at info@bookitpod.com. And check out our bookshop affiliate link, which will have all of these books listed for purchase for you. Bookshop helps financially independent bookstores across the country. So by shopping with us, you're actually shopping with every single independent bookstore in America. How cool is that?
Very cool. And if you're like, I want to get into middle grade and you want like even more suggestions.
Yes.
Further back in our bookshop is, I forget what I called it, something about middle grade it's summer like, reading or something.
Yeah. Which, and it's good for not just summer.
Yeah.
Like it's Jill's beautifully curated books of recommendations, a ton of them. There's like over 40 books on there.
I might have gotten carried away.
Yeah, it's easy to do.
It is.
Jill, thank you for being an advocate for middle grade as adults. It's really been some of the best and some of my favorite reading I've done in the last couple of years.
Thank you for indulging my passion.
Of course. That's what friends are for. go take care of your teenagers.
Yeah.
We'll talk soon.
Bye. Bye. Thank you for listening to Book It, a bi-weekly podcast where we talk frankly about books.
Book It is available across podcast platforms.
Subscribe to never miss an episode, and don't forget to leave a review before you go.
We'd love to stay in touch. You can find us online at bookitpod.com or on Instagram and Twitter at bookitpod.
Want to read something you heard on today's episode? Visit us at bookshop.org/shop/bookitpod.
Book It was created by hosts Jill Burkett-Ragacy and Michael Woodson, with sound design and production by Madeline Call at Honeysuckler.